It's the Raven and the Blues on BFBS Radio 2 on FM and also online as a listen again and as a podcast, of course, downloadable for your MP3 player of choice whenever you want to listen to it. And once again, we're honoured and pleased to have a guest in the studio. I say studio and sometimes people think it's going to be a large acoustically padded room. And it's not. It's a top deck of a houseboat on the Thames. But Doug McLeod, who we've featured many times on the programme over the last couple of years, it's great to have you here.
And thank you, Dave. It's good to be with you.
You're on tour across the UK and into Europe. It's about 7 or 8 weeks altogether, isn't it?
Well, you got a little bit longer, boy. If my wife finds out that, I'm in trouble. I think it's 6 weeks.
6 weeks.
Yeah.
Is it something you like doing still?
I better.
Yeah, I know. I was looking at
I do like it. I like the idea of, it's been great. I feel like, you know, I look on things and, you know, fellas work. In America, they work 30 years, 35 years of their life, come over here for 2 weeks. And, they, you know, they get on a bus and they go from London and they get on that ferry and then they go down to Brussels, then they go to Amsterdam and they say they've seen it.
Yeah.
I feel so fortunate, man, that I've been able to do what I love to do, get paid.
But do you get much of a chance in between? Because often it tends to be, you know, sort of one night and then the next night.
Usually. But like yesterday, I was in Stonehenge.
Right.
Absolutely. I go by and say, man, that's a famous place. I'm going to stop by and see that. I've seen the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam, you know. If there's a chance for me to see something, I'm going to see it.
Yeah. Last week on The Raven and the Blues, we had one of our own road warriors, Papa George, who's been 30-odd years in the
business. I know that, man. And we did a Resonator Festival together.
Oh, yes, of course. That's right. You're both Resonator. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
What was the name of that? Pilsen.
Yes.
Where they made the beer.
Mm.
Yes.
And he's a road warrior of many years, and he was around paying his dues with the English blues bands, John Mayall, Jeff Beck, etc. And that's the same as you, because you've been around a little while, and you played with the great side of Chicago.
Well, I played with George Harmonica Smith. I played with Big Mama Thornton, Lowell Fulson, Pee Wee Creighton. I'm going to forget one here. I played with a lot of them. I was very, very fortunate. Eddie Cleanhead Vincent, who I think was one of the best musicians that I ever worked with.
He was, it's a long time since I've played him on the program. Because he had such a great voice, didn't he?
Great voice and musical. He was very, very musical. When I played behind him, it was a chance to go to school and hear his melodies. Like when I worked with Lowell Fulson, his lyrics and his melodies that he used in blues, different than most guys. Just great to be around those guys. And George Harmonica Smith, maybe the best natural entertainer I've ever seen. And his theory was that you feed the people first and then they feed you. And when I saw him do some of his magic, I told my wife, after the first time I played with him, in a redneck bar. We played a redneck bar in California, Dave. And when we walked in there, George was the only black face in there. I said, holy smokes, this could be a rough night. So I told my wife, I said, sit by the door so you can get out to the payphone if something happens. This is before the days of cell phones and stuff. So we get up there, we play a blues. The applause is like, I said, oh man, this is going to be a long 4 hours. This is going to be a long time. And then George picked up. He said, you get a line, I'll get a pole, baby. You get a line, I'll get a pole, honey. You get a line and I'll get a pole. We go down to that crawdad hole, honey. Oh, babe, be mine. And he said, come on, fellas. And then we joined in. Had all those rednecks clapping their hands on the wrong beat.
Yeah.
But having a good time. And he won them over. And that's when I said, I got to be around this guy. Because I want some of that gravy to drop on me. As I learn from this guy. And after a while, we became very, very close friends, you know.
We'll talk about your poetry and your songwriting in a little
poetry,
while.
Poetry, thank you.
We'll talk about it in a minute. Let's have something musically from you first.
Okay, let me see. Since we haven't planned anything, how about I'm going to do My Black Pony. Let's do that one, man. I'm going to find my black pony, take my pony and ride. let my pony ride. I'm gonna ride in the night till I get satisfied. I'm gonna ride in the night till she gets satisfied. She got a long black mane and a flow all down her back. She got this long black mane and a flow all down her back. Well, she know how to love me. That's a natural fact. Says she know how to love me. Sure is a natural fact. You know I really don't care on what you might say. You know I really don't care you might say. Now where I'm from, what I do, ain't your business anyway. Now where I'm from, what I do, ain't your business anyway. Get satisfied. I'm gonna ride her in the night till she gets satisfied. I'm gonna ride in the night till we get satisfied. Lasted that long.
Yeah.
All right, Mule.
You were talking before there about your musical heritage and the bands you played with. The genre of the blues, the music I play in the program and the history of the blues, is everything from guys in sharp suits on stages in smoky clubs with a band behind them and electric guitar up front. And then how I saw you, really, and how we're hearing you today, which is kind of the back porch with the guitar and the rocking chair. But obviously, you were one of the guys in the sharp suits in the old days, were you?
Well, yeah. I mean, ironically enough, I started off as an acoustic player.
Right.
Yeah. Started off as an acoustic player. And then, I think what happened was I heard two guys, B.B. King, which we all do. And, of course, I heard Albert King when I was coming up, Albert and B.B., and then Kenny Burrell. And when I heard Kenny Burrell, I said, wow, I think I'd like to play like that, you know. So I tried it for a while, and I even tried my hand at jazz. But I come to find out that it's a funny thing, Dave. What they hear things. I talked with Joe Pass. I met him, and he and I talked, and I saw Joe Pass do something. We were sitting down just the same as we're sitting down here today. And he said he played this. We played a little Satin Doll, and I just played the blues over it. Mm-hmm. You know, just simple. But that's what I heard, right? And then Joe, well, he played all this stuff over it. And we talked a little bit, and he said, you know, I'm just not playing scales. He said, I'd sing it. And then he sang it. Then he played it. I said, holy smokes, look at this. Oh, what is this going on? And I learned a valuable lesson. Jazz guys, they hear more than what I hear. What I hear is what you just heard.
Yeah.
But I hear things inside the frets, right? Not just a, for instance, this is what we talked about. If there's a nail on the wall and a legit singer is going to hit that nail, they take a laser gun, hit it right on the money. Blues singer takes a tomato in his head. That's why when you hear blues and it's too perfect, it doesn't sound right. Have you ever noticed
that? Yeah, I see what you mean.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. When they hit that third exactly right, it don't sound right.
But where does the jazz player come in then? What's he doing with it? Is he
both?
He's coming up from behind the note and then hitting it.
I don't know. You know, I don't know. I'm talking more about harmony. Like they'll hear a chord, like an E7 chord, and they'll play. I'm guessing. Let's say they play a kind of F scale off of that. I could never hear. I could never sing that. That would sound wrong to me. Do you understand?
I do.
That sounds like a mistake to me. Mm. So I got no business doing that.
So you know? We spoke about the poetry of your writing, because as a blues guy also, you write really fine poems which are put to music.
Thank you.
Has it always been that way?
Yeah, I think, I like to think they've progressed, you know? But I think so, because the bottom line, I used to have a stutter when I was a boy.
Yeah.
I couldn't speak, you know. And then I think it was 13 years old, so all the way up to 13, I really couldn't speak. So when I picked up a guitar and started to sing, all this expression started to come out.
And the stutter went,
Pretty much. Mm. Yeah, pretty much it went away. This voice came. It's amazing. I don't know if this is the voice I was born with or not.
This voice sounds like it's seen a few bottles of spirits and a few cigarettes in its time.
Yeah, it has. Yes, it has. He's not seeing that anymore. But
no. But it did.
Sure did.
Yeah. You've got to get some rough edges on the tonsils, haven't you, really? Yeah.
Well, yeah, I got some stories I can tell, you know. But I think that's what happened. And then I think that I wanted to express myself.
Mm.
It was real important to me to do that.
But the thing which struck me about your music is that it seems that the depth of influences, the things you're writing your songs about, seem to be getting more meaningful, if you like, as you get older. Is that experiences of age, or is it the old stories suddenly now finding voice in your writing?
That's a hell of a question.
Sorry.
No, that's a good one. The first thing that comes to my mind is way back when I was learning this music, Dave, and the old man I learned it from. I remember we sitting on the corner, and I told him, I said, after he had liked me, this was about 7 months we had known each other. First he didn't like me, you know, but after a while he did, and we were talking. And I told him, I said, Mr. Banks, you know, I don't know nothing about picking cotton. The stuff you told me about hellhounds and mojos and goober dust, all that stuff. I said, that scares me. I said, what am I going to do? He said, you ever been broke? I said, yeah. He said, you ever needed a woman? I said, yeah. He said, right about that. That's the blues too. So I took that to mean that anything that's true in my experience is something that could be wrote about. So if I live through something, if I do something, if I see something, what I call it chronicalizing. And that's my job. And I learned that from him. He just told me this. He just said, be truthful. He said, be honest. That's what the blues is. And then Brownie McGee, when I met him, that's what he said. So I think that's what it is. And if my writing's getting better, that's good, you know. But the most important thing is, as a writer, to me, is to be honest. Because there's a temptation to make yourself look really good. As you know, I'm a real great guy here. I'm right, you know.
I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Yeah, and all that kind of stuff, you know, all that jive stuff. But that's not going to reach too many people. If you write from your heart, then you're going to speak to a lot of people, because everybody feels these feelings that are in blues.
Takes a big man, a confident man, to be able to, if you like, bare their soul and tell the truth, as opposed to building the facade around it.
Right.
Is that possibly the what's happened, that you've got older and got more confident and there's no need to bullshit anymore?
I mean, they're not going to hurt me any more than they already have.
Yeah.
So what the hell, you know? And tell the truth. And then when I see the young guys, the young bucks come up to me, and they say thank you and stuff, and that makes it worth it too.
We'll talk about the young kids in the blues after this next piece. What are you going to do for us next?
Let me see. Maybe. I'll tell you what. Since we're talking about that, we talked about a little bit of Lowell. Let's do a song that was inspired by Lowell. This is a song that... let me see. It's a song called Things Will Be Better, You'll See. The funny thing is, Dave, Lowell inspired this song when I heard him. First time I heard him, I wrote this song. But when I picked up the guitar and it came out, it sounded like Ivory Joe Hunter. I remember Lowell saying to me, he said, man, don't sound like me. I said, no, don't. I said, but you're the guy that inspired it. Things Will Be Better, You'll See. Tell me some reason why. If you don't love me, would you tell me some reason why? Oh, I wanna do better, but I have no more tears to cry. You say you're not leaving, feel like you're already gone. You say you're not leaving, feel like you're already gone. You still share a bed, but I feel so all alone. Sunrise begging darkness, feel the evening wind blow. Sunrise begging darkness, feel the evening wind blow. And sometime a good love dies, and that's what hurts me so. Can't be lovers when I know you won't leave. And we can't be lovers when I know you won't leave. So I'm going on, baby. Things be better, you'll see. So I'm going on, baby. Things be better, you'll see. So I'm going on, child. Things be better, you'll see.
The Raven and the Blues on BFBS Radio 2, and also as a podcast, and as a Listen Again feature, and you're listening to Doug McLeod. We were talking about the youth. The tours you're doing here in Europe, I know every country is different. The Germans have a very different approach to blues. Here in the UK, it's on the up a little bit, but it's still nowhere near as strong as it is on the continent. Mm-hmm. Your age group, though, as you travel around, does it vary, or is it roughly?
Yeah, it's very... It used to be just guys, maybe 50s.
Yeah, old guys like me, yes.
Yeah, well, me too.
Yeah.
70, you know. But now I'm starting to see the young ones come. I'm starting to see 23-year-olds to 30-year-olds. And whenever they buy a CD, I ask them, I say, how old are you? And they'll say, well, I'm 25 or I'm 26. And I say, well, why are you here to hear this music? They say, because it's real. Mm. And I say, well, that's good. So I'm thinking maybe all that electronic music that they've been listening to, after a while, you know, they probably say, you know, I want a little grease.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true.
And with the blues, you can get some grease.
Color, is the audience, again, pretty mixed in terms of race and color? Or?
No, it's predominantly white.
Yeah.
It's a funny thing. It's a very, very funny thing. In the old days, when I worked with George and Pee Wee and everything, of course, we played the black houses,
yeah,
the black clubs. I never had any trouble with that. I never had any trouble, man. They're all really nice to me, even when I started out, you know. But now, since those guys are gone, you don't see too much of it. You don't see too many young black.
Yeah, it's a great pity, because I think that they have kind of thrown away their heritage in a sense. So much of it is still exists in their current R&B light, as I would call it, and rap and things. But it's such a great pity to me that they haven't gone back to the heritage and seen the way where it came from and how it developed.
Yeah, well, the underground hip hop guys I like. To me, they're the street poets of today. Just like Lemon Jefferson was in his time, and Blind Willie Johnson was in his time. And of course, that's a mix too. There's white and black, Hispanics, everybody doing that. Mm. I see that as a positivity. I really do. And I'm not talking about the guys that are gangster guys now.
No.
I'm talking about the guys that are like, in my day, remind me of Bob Dylan, talking about social change and making a difference in this world, being yourself. You know, it's a funny thing, Dave. I remember when my father, he would never listen to my music. Never listen. He said, turn that stuff off. Turn that stuff off. And when my son asked me, he said, Dad, I want you to listen to this guy called Slug. I said, Slug? I said, what am I listening to a guy named Slug? Then I remember my father, you know, and I said, well, I'm all right, I'll listen. And then I listened to him. I said, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. And then I was playing a song, and my son says, hey, Dad, that's my beat. I said, that's not your beat. I said, that goes back to Mississippi. He says, no. I said, yeah, it sure does. And there are common threads. I just think the young people are not aware of it yet, because there's been a loss of history in the importance of tradition. If they knew, if they said, you mean this comes from that groove, that thing that goes like... That kind of groove, that comes from like a Mississippi style. Yeah, yeah. One chord, get that thump going, get it going. And You know, they hear that kind of stuff. If they knew that, if they knew if their education was better, and they said, the music you're listening to, come from here, let me show you why. Then I think it would tighten it up.
I wasn't able to get to see you in Aldershot last night, and you're in Wales tonight, but I've got a feeling that your stage show, is it like what we're having now? Is it just you?
Yeah,
just...
I never play in nothing.
Conversation with the blues, and every night is different. You don't have a set list, do you?
Or? No, I got a list in front of me in case I go brain dead. I'm at that age now where, you know, I got... just something happens, I go, okay.
Okay, what do I do next?
You know, I'm in what tune in? Okay, I got a shot at this one.
Yeah.
But usually, I just let it flow. That's funny, because that's what I say it every time I do a show. I tell them, because every night's different. Every night is different. I'm different. The audience is different. And making music in front of a live audience, to me, is like making love. You can't, to me, I can't make love to my lady the same way every day, every time, the same thing, and say, listen, between the football games, you and I are going to make some love. You know, you can't. It don't work for me. And making music, it doesn't work for me either. It's
but
just flowing.
In this case, the lady you're making love to, your audience, is changing as you move from country to country. And mm-hmm. people's approach to the music and mm-hmm. their response to yep. having a good time is different. So
absolutely.
So where in Europe, I mean, so you're heading off after you've finished in the UK. You're mm-hmm. off to, is it Italy or Germany after
Let
that?
Let me think. After this one, I think it's Denmark.
Denmark. Okay. Denmark. That's a really good example then. So how different are you going to be with your Danish lover than you have been with your English lovers?
Yeah, I'd just be the same. I'm not going to change,
right.
You know? I'm just going to, I might pick up a song. I might see if the audience might need to laugh one time.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I learned from George, you know, to see where the audience is, to sense them. And then, but it should always be a roller coaster. Like, take you up, make you laugh, then make you think, and make you cry, come back. So then when you walk out of a concert that I do for you, that I want you to feel like you've been through some things and you're thinking and maybe get a handle, a different handleization on this thing we call life. So you can deal with it better. Mm-hmm. Yes. That's what I learned from the most old guy.
Let's move on then with that concept, because we've had something contemplative.
Contemplative.
And something, we've had something up-tempo.
Yes. How about something funny?
Yeah, make me laugh.
Isn't that something? Well, now, okay. All right.
If not laugh out loud, laugh inside.
That's the polite way of saying that. That really wasn't that funny. All right, but let's see. How much I owe? Yeah. All right, we'll do this one. How much I owe? Takes too long to mention. Boys, I'm so broke, I can't even pay attention. I got me a brand new car, you know, down at Sam's Easy Credit Auto Store. The repo man come the other night. Now, I ain't got that car no more. And how much I owe? Take too long to mention. I'm so broke, I can't even pay attention. You know, my credit cards got so high, I got me a bill consolidation loan. Now I'm paying twice on money that already been here one time and gone. How much I owe? Take too long to mention. I'm so broke, I can't even pay attention. My credit card me on the phone,
I try to make him understand. I said, man, I don't think you realize just how far in the toilet I am. How much I owe. Take you long to mention. Boys, I'm so broke. I can't even pay attention. You know they say you gotta spend money to make money. Mm-hmm. And now I know just what they mean. I spend the money, they make the money, and I'm the best fool they ever seen. How much I owe. Just take too long to mention, man. I'm so broke, I can't even pay attention. Did I tell you, it pained me. It just pained me to mention that I'm so broke, I can't even pay attention.
Ticks all the boxes, yes.
Yeah, man, why not?
When your album arrived, the Where You Been album, and we first played a track from it, I sort of quickly went through all the tracks, and that was the one we featured first on the show.
No lie,
I think it's just so clever.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Talking of the album, it's been out 3 or 4 weeks now, a bit longer perhaps, about 2 months.
That's
right. And so kind of the tourist to push the album forward. But why is an American blues man out of California, originally out of Missouri, is it?
North Carolina.
North Carolina. Yeah. But now sort of resident in California. Yeah. Why are you on a Dutch record label?
Because he's honest.
Yeah.
He pays me. First time I've gotten royalties, artist royalties.
Really?
Except for JVC. JVC paid me royalties. But I don't think anybody else ever paid me royalties. The other guy that pays me that's honest is Bruce Aguilar.
Oh, yes. Alligator.
Songs that his artists have done of mine, I always get money from him. He's an honest man.
It's also good because both those record labels, Black and Tan out of Holland, and Bruce with Alligator Records, and Northern Blues out of America.
Northern Blues, Fred. Yeah.
They are in the forefront of this sort of podcasting blues revolution, giving the chance of radio stations and DJs to play the music and say, yeah, just use it. And I think it's revolutionizing the way that people are being able to hear the music. I think it's really excellent stuff.
I think so, too. I think Jan is, he reminds me of Bruce Aguilar. He just happens to be from Holland. He has that same work ethic, he's a tireless worker, you know. Mm. And he lets his artists play. I mean, when we do an album, he says, here's the money, make the album.
Does he get actively involved in just there's the money and do it.
He says, you know, that's why I asked you to do the record. I like your music.
And is he doing like an Ike Turner did in the 60s? Is he traveling around America, seeing you work, and then sort of taking you backstage afterwards and saying, I'd like to have you on my record label? How does it work?
I don't think it works that way. I think they send things to him now. Now with the net, you know, with the web and stuff. Mm-hmm. Man, you send stuff to people by the web, and then they listen, and then if they're interested, they get in touch. But I remember the first time when I approached him, a mutual friend named Dirk Van Kloester out of Belgium, I was looking for an agent, right? And he suggested Jan. So I called Jan, and Jan didn't want any part of it. He said, no, I don't want any more solo acoustic guys. I'm tired of it. And I said, but you've never seen me. I said, you've never seen me work. He said, well, I don't want it, you know. But I wasn't going to give up.
Yeah.
So I kept on persisting. And finally said, you know, if I don't at least see this guy, jeez, he's going to bug me all the time. So he finally came down and he saw me and said, yeah, I like what you do. So when AudioQuest changed hands and Joe Harley kind of moved out and it wasn't really his thing, I went with Black and Tan.
Yeah. And the album, I mean, it's been pushed extremely well. I think that I can see it on so many sites now available for download and what have you, and people can buy the tracks individually, which I think, again, is going to be the future for all of you, really.
I think so, too, Dave. It's sort of like the old-fashioned record stores. We used to be able to go in, listen to it, and if you like the record, you buy it.
Yeah.
You know? Mm. Kind of nice, isn't it?
And it also shrinks the world, too, because we tend to forget that a lot of our audience aren't in big towns with big record stores. And also the record stores these days only sell the top 100 anyway, or the top 50. And again, the net has shrunk that. And so we've got 4,000 people roughly listening to us across the world right now via the internet. And that's really quite staggering. And it's not just because the radio happened to be on. They've actually chosen to listen to this particular blues program. And that, I think that's where we're going to be listening to radio in the future. And the music will get much, much further than it ever could before.
I hope so. Knock on wood, right?
Yeah. The album, how easy did it come together? Did you have all the music written, all the words written, or did you then have to go away and sit down and work hard for a month or two?
No, it doesn't work that way with me. In fact, I'm working on our next album now.
Right.
So. You know, usually it's like 16 songs. We go in. We don't do overdubs as far as my vocals or guitar that or bass or drums. We don't do any of that. Maybe we put a shaker on.
Yeah.
On this new album, there's some background vocals. But I believe that you got to get the performance. And don't mess with it. Don't start with the drum track and then put the bass on. And I don't do that.
So it's done in one take, all of you simultaneously.
That's right. So that we look at it, so we get the performance of it. And what inspired me to do that and stay that way was a couple of things. But Joe Harley did it. Joe was live to two-track. That was it. It was like the old-fashioned way.
That's what we're doing today.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And with there's an old story about Miles Davis. When Miles Davis made this record, I don't know which one it is for sure, but he made one of his famous ones, and there's a big mistake on there. And they asked him if he wanted to go back and change it. And the story I heard was he said no. And they said, why? And he said, because this, for future generations, they'll know that humans made this record.
Yes.
Now, what a great thing to say, because we all make mistakes. Mm. Every one of us makes a mistake. It's how you get out of the mistake.
Yes.
That makes it cool.
There was a line which I'm going to get wrong, but it was on the Woodstock album. And it was something to the effect of, this was a live recorded album, and therefore, like a good cowhide, it has the scars and the marks showing it hasn't had a good life, so to speak, you know. And this album is the same. There are mistakes on it, but it was live, and it's got a real character to it, you know.
Well, I'm the same way. Yeah. I just hope it'll take you maybe 452 listenings before you go, wait a minute, did I make a mistake on that one?
Well, I was going to... I'm so broke I can't even pay attention. Actually, I was going to say that's so faithful to the album, and so I was going to suggest before you even told me that obviously the album was done probably in only one take with everybody there, you know.
That's
but
right.
You've already sort of explained sort of things.
That's how we do it. Of course, the girls came in later.
Mm-hmm.
And then Denny went back and put a shaker on some things, you know. But that doesn't change the essence of the song. That's not like you're going back and saying, well, I gotta make a mistake. The song is there. It is going to be there. And when there were mistakes in it, if I added an extra bar or an extra beat, we work with that. That's just how it is. You don't mess with that. I just say, let it go.
You're about 3 weeks behind B.B. King, who just did his last tour of Europe. And spoke. I think I may be wrong about Europe, but definitely the last tour of the UK. Mm. So at the age of 80, he's... I don't think he's hung up his guitar. He's hung up his guitar in terms of international travel.
Right.
That's some way away for you, isn't it? Because I can...
I did a show with Honey Boy back in California. We did a concert together. And... He's 93, 94. Mm. Still, I love being with him.
Yeah.
And I hope that's for me too. I hope I can go to 90.
So your territory shrinks a little bit, that's all.
I don't know. I
saw Pinetop when he was over here, 2 years ago now. And he was then in his 90s. But since then, I don't think Pinetop travels anymore.
No. That's what I hear. He doesn't.
Yeah.
But Honey Boy does.
Right.
Lockwood still gets out there. Henry Townsend's a little sick, but Henry gets out there too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's great to be around those guys, even if their facility may not be where it used to be. Because, I mean, 93 years old. I tell people, I say, you don't come here for that. Listen, you're viewing history here. That when he goes, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. You're not going to see that anymore. It's done. So enjoy it.
Where can we enjoy next? Are we going to have another track off the album?
Well, I'm trying to think. You know, I just made that record, and I said, what did I do?
Okay, give us a... If I know. Give us a taste, therefore, of something which is already in the brain and in the fingers, which will be eventually on the new album. Is there anything you could do for that?
Well, yeah.
A work in progress, so to speak.
Okay. All right. We'll go up here. Well, as soon as you said that, now, Dave, now my mind went to another place. Is that all right?
Yeah, I'm happy to follow your mind wherever it goes.
Okay. Let's see. All right, now my mind went right back to what you asked for.
Ah.
I don't know what I'm going to do with this mind of mine.
Doug McLeod, a man of a fickle mind.
Yeah.
Like a butterfly.
That's right.
From flower to flower.
Let me... My good girl home with me. Just sitting by this river, wishing my good girl home with me. Sure that river roar, I don't believe that gonna be. You know I love my little girl, boy, but I just seem to do it wrong. I love, but I seem to do it wrong. I can only blame myself. Now my baby, she gone. My buddy told me this morning she found somebody new. Yes, my partner told me she found somebody new. I'm just gonna sit here by this river, sing my good girl blue. Wishing my good girl home with me. Sitting by the river, just wishing my good girl home with me. Show that river roll, I don't believe that gonna be.
Raven and the Blues on BFBS Radio 2. You're travelling alone. And for a long tour, do you have long periods of loneliness, or does the whole thing... do you meet enough people along the way to take that loneliness away?
Well, you know, there's a little loneliness in it, but like I've said with the articles I write for Blues Review, you know, me and myself like each other pretty good. So yeah. When I'm out there on the road, it's all right. And I have my iPod, I have my music. And... I like the idea. I guess I'm a throwback. I like the idea of being out on that highway. When I had to get a cell phone, it really bothered me. Mm. I like being on that highway where no one knows where I am, except me, and running.
The other thing is that I've had 40 years or thereabouts as a DJ, and therefore what you do as a DJ is sit in a room on your own and talk to yourself, and you...
I've done the same thing on a highway.
Yeah. And you're a DJ too. We're a DJ on a station in Los Angeles. Is
yeah,
that right?
I was. That was fun too. I enjoyed that. I was there for 4 years. I did it. And then I just got too busy. Just the touring got too busy. And I couldn't keep on pre-recording the shows, you know. So it was a public station, so they needed the money.
Yeah.
So you just can't have a pre-recorded show and then break in and have another guy to make an announcement.
Did I read somewhere... it was something like, was it a six-hour show or something?
Five hours on Saturday and 5 hours on Sunday.
That's a long shift behind a microphone.
It is a long shift, yeah.
With you choosing all the music as well?
Yeah.
Excellent, yeah.
Yeah. I used to pick the first three albums.
Yeah.
And then go from there. Mm. Just whatever would come.
You mean just as the show was rolling out?
As the show was going, yeah.
That's the way it should be. The number of times I sit down playing The Raven and the Blues, get the records out, and then halfway through think, no, and race back to the library and get something else.
I know that feeling. Yeah. You know, I mean, because it changes. I mean, because it's the same as making music. It's the same as doing a show to me, you know, a concert. It's the same thing.
Change the set list.
Sure. Just let it go. See what happens.
You brought your resonator guitar. Do you have a stomp box and things as well, or do you just kick the stage hard?
I got
hard?
Enough foot that I don't need it.
Yeah, just kick the stage hard,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
And the traveling when you're in the States as well, do you tend to do long tours in America, or does it tend to be leap out, do a couple of gigs, and then back home again?
Well, a mixture. Sometimes, like, I'm going to do a weekend when I get back, and then but then I got a Pacific Northwest swing. I just got done with a Midwest swing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not as intensive here because I live in the States. And go out a little bit and come back, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks tops, maybe a month. Here, though, it's a little longer because I only get over here twice a year.
And when you are back at home, mm-hmm. are you there long enough to pick up a residency, and do you have a sort of a regular Saturday night anywhere? Or?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I had a guy tell me, where was he from? He was from Belgium, I think. He came to see me. He said, you like Lightning Hopkins. He said, you never stop working. I said, well, yeah, I mean, I love it. I got a place that we play, a couple of places. And I think that's the best place to find out how your songs are going to do. Mm. Because those people there, they don't know who I am, really, you know. And there's no cover charge.
Yeah.
And they're paying $1.25 for a Budweiser. They're drinking their six Buds and not getting any wiser. You know, that's the kind of people I'm talking about. And if a song can touch them, then you know that song's a good song.
I think one of my best blues experiences was in Florida, and they just had a girl blues acoustic singer there, and it was, again, no cover charge, standard bar prices for the drinks, but she just blew me away. And when you compare that with, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago when we had another guest on, and that we've got just down from here, Hampton Court Palace, Eric Clapton is playing there in the summer. And the tickets are $250.
Wow.
I know, yes. It's all corporate stuff, mind you. But yes, I mean, I think that you're right. That it's a good place to try the work out and see how it works, because if you can catch a bar crowd who are not there for you, it makes a big difference, isn't it?
Well, see, now that's how the old guys did it. I mean, George told me in Chicago, with Muddy and those guys, Muddy and Span and all those guys, they worked like a Tuesday night. There were 20 people in that club. Mm-hmm. And they went there for them. They were there to pick up women, drink, and shoot some pool, get some meat. So they learned how to do it. It's sort of like, if you can do that and survive that, then when you come out where they pay money to hear you, that makes it a lot easier. See, you just got to, because you already been through the gauntlet, so to speak.
How big are the venues you're playing on the European tour? Do they vary dramatically?
They vary. Festivals, you know, you do festivals.
Yeah.
And then you might do an acoustic place, which may sometimes be as small as 45, 50 people. Last night, maybe 100, 200 people. It all depends.
Yeah.
You know.
And is the guitar mic'd up or into the PA system, into a cabinet?
It goes through a Fishman.
Yeah.
It goes through a Fishman. I have a Fishman that I carry. Mm-hmm. And then it goes from that to the board. And then they
do it from the board, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do your own sound mix before you take over, or do you just trust the guy on the board?
Sometimes. The hardest thing about playing a resonated guitar is that an inexperienced sound man thinks they're supposed to sound thin and high-endy.
Yeah.
Which they don't. There's a warmth to these things. And that where you put the mic, like you have the mic on the right spot, by the F-holes. It should never be back by this.
No.
You know, it should always be up here, because that's where the real sound of these things is, a combination of both.
That's right. But the fact that the resonator comes out with so much extra power out of the resonator at the far end, it almost seems like sacrilege in a sense, because when you do put it through the cabinet, you're getting a sort of almost a total clear sound, aren't you, there?
Well, it depends. How I do it is, this is a P90. Mm-hmm. And then I also have in the back here, I got a Highlander. So the Highlander brings the cone sound in. That's how I do it. And then I blend it. And then I have a master volume.
Okay.
So that's how I do it.
So the three controls are the two pickups and then a master gain out of that.
Yeah. There you go. Yes. Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. We're almost into our hour. It's been absolutely wonderful talking to you.
Thanks.
Album is available from Black and Tan Records, also from your website, which is nicely put together. A very sort of...
And Dubheads. That fan site. The not so official... Doug McLeod's site, DubHeads.
Dubheads.com. All right. Okay. And where do they emanate from?
They emanate from California and places beyond.
Right. So are they like a sort of a bluesy parrot head?
Got me there. What's a parrot head?
Parrot head is Jimmy Buffett. And the fan club for Jimmy Buffett are parrot heads.
Absolutely. That's exactly what they are. They're Dubheads.
Dubheads.
Yeah, and they're from all over the world. They it's funny. They even got a picture of my dog up there.
Right.
Rufus, that shows them some pictures of me in the attic, which it was a hoot. I sent it all over there. I had no idea what this guy was going to do. And then he said, check out the site. And there's me and Albert King, and he's got me and Luke Allison
archives,
and all these guys. And I said, and my dog saying, come on in.
So we'll put the links both to your official site and your unofficial Dubhead site on the Raven and the Blues page.
Thanks.
What we're going to close with?
Maybe. Let's really move one, huh?
Yeah.
All right. We'll close with Since I Left St. Lou. It's kind of appropriate. I said, woman, oh, I sure know the blues. I said, baby, yeah, I sure seen the blues. Well, since I crossed the river now, since I left St. Louis, got by from women, my gambling game way. You see my mama with her, with a head of shame, Lord, fast laughing women. Oh, my gambling game. You can't see my mama with a head all down a shame. Can't find nobody gonna share my night with. Make what wrong, y'all start to seem right. No, I can't find nobody. Nobody share my night. Well, it make what wrong now start to seem so right. Brought me down, and the only thing I know, just my nose on the ground. And I said, woman, boy, I sure seen the blue. Yeah, baby, yeah, I sure know the blue. Well, since I crossed the river,
since I left St. Louis. Oh, since I crossed the river, y'all, since I left St. Louis. You know, partner, I sure seen the blue.
You've been listening to an hour of really fine blues and conversation with Doug McLeod. Doug, thank you so much.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.